Add the word and keep us corporate and commercial free by adding a donation button. So if you are in a position to give support, please take a moment.
Hello, my name is Holly Hedgepeth, and I'm with the Cancer Services Program of Columbia and Greene County, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC ACRA.
Hey, what's up, everyone? This is DJ Bar from Friday Night Vibe Session. If you like hip-hop, dancehall, and pop, and we have much more music, we play the second and fourth Friday of every month, 9:30 p.m. to 12 o'clock midnight. Everyone's going to be on their feet. Let's go.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
You were right as always.
As always.
I know you love when I say that. Tom Rowe, if you're listening, please clip that, because I know Ellen would love to hear that played repeatedly on this station.
No, you didn't have to do it. I don't need it. I don't need it. I pat myself on the back.
There you go. And she did it literally, folks, for you who missed that. Because we're not on TV.
Tune in Tom DiPietro and Ellen Thurston every Thursday on the WGXC Afternoon Show, 4 to 6 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
You've tuned in to All Together Now, WGXC's regional look at the news from Hudson Valley and the Capital Region, from the Catskills to the Berkshires and beyond. I'm Tom Rowe, and today you'll hear all sorts of local news updates, weather, interviews, and more, plus community events and the song of the day on All Together Now.
This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the news. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
We take you now to
this radio broadcast.
You are tuned in to All Together Now, a collaborative one-hour news show for community radio stations in the Capital Region and New York's Hudson Valley. All Together Now features contributions from the public, along with programmers at WOOC in Troy and WGXC in Accra, featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews. Next, the national headlines from Public News Service.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast from Monday, November the 19th, 2018. I'm Mike Clifford. More than 1,200 missing now in the California wildfires. Also on the Monday rundown, a pair of reports on gun violence in the nation. Plus, concerns that proposed green card rules favor the wealthy. First, here's our top story. Authorities sifted through the charred wreckage of California's deadliest ever wildfire Sunday. Reuters reporting they were searching for any signs of life of the 1,276 people now listed as missing after the campfire tore through the mountain town of Paradise. The remains of 76 people have been recovered early on Sunday. 60% of the fire was reported to be contained. Meantime, a listening tour is underway after more than 64% of Florida voters chose to restore voting rights to people with prior felonies.
The passage of Amendment 4 gives back the full citizenship rights of the state's 1.4 million ex-felons who were convicted and completed sentences for past crimes, with the exception of those convicted of murder or felony sexual offenses. The Florida Rights Restoration Coalition has led the charge to get the amendment passed. Speaking on the Rotunda podcast, Coalition President Desmond Meade says after the excitement to see the amendment's passage, they now are circling back to have a deeper conversation with individuals impacted.
Number one, just get their reactions. Number two, get their hopes. And find out more about what are these issues that they feel they would need to address in order to improve their quality of life and with the overall goal of making our community safer.
With 15 local chapters through Florida, the coalition is the only statewide organization run by formerly convicted people set to advocate on behalf of those with past felonies and their families. To learn more about the listening tour or to take a survey about Amendment 4, visit floridarrc.com. I'm Tramell Gomes.
The new set of voters is expected to play a significant role in the upcoming 2020 elections, but for now, the process is listening to those impacted and getting them registered to vote. A new study finds that 85% of deaths involving firearms in Utah are suicides. State officials hope to use that data to develop strategies to prevent those deaths. More on the story from Mark Richardson.
The report, developed for the Utah legislature by the Harvard School of Public Health, shows that while Utah has one of the lowest rates of murder by guns in the country, suicide by firearm is a growing public health problem. Kimberly Myers, a suicide prevention administrator with Utah Department of Human Services, says lawmakers plan to develop policies to make gun owners more responsible about how and where they store their weapons.
The data in the report give us a new way to talk about the problem of suicide with firearms. And so hopefully we can create community education strategies that help people understand the risk of injury or death by firearms.
Myers says Utah also has a high rate of legal gun ownership and that the report links data from a variety of sources to paint a picture of the relationship between firearms and suicide. She says statistics show that many firearm suicides occur during times of high stress or conflict when a gun is readily available and that lawmakers seek to establish requirements for responsible firearm storage.
Meantime, last month's deadly shooting in a North Carolina high school made the news, but some worry the daily threat of gun violence isn't making headlines.
Gun deaths have risen steadily in the past few years in the state, with an all-time high of more than 1,400 lives lost to gun-related incidents in 2016, the latest total available from the CDC. As a new state director for the group Moms Rising, Jessica Burrows is advocating for tougher gun laws. She says both of her son's schools have had close calls in the past year.
And my son's elementary school went into lockdown. And then my middle schooler's track meet was interrupted when an armed man ran onto the field after a robbery nearby.
Experts say there's no one reason the numbers are rising, but they aren't waiting for the next school shooting to happen. This is Antoinette Kerr reporting.
Advocates are looking for reforms like a ban on bump stocks and military assault rifles. Most of all, they want children to feel safe. And finally, today is National Comment Day, part of a campaign against President Donald Trump's proposal to make it harder for working-class legal immigrants to get a green card.
There are only 3 weeks left to register your opinion on the public charge rule that would weigh negatively. Reliance on Medi-Cal, CalFresh, Medicare Part D, or Section 8 housing vouchers within the last 3 years. Carolina Garmero with the California Immigrant Policy Center says the regulation would lead to more suffering.
Families will go without food, without health care, without housing support. It really makes this country sicker and poorer, and it really cuts away at economic mobility and prosperity in this country.
Other factors that would newly count against applicants with the new proposal include families with multiple children, seniors, poor English language skills, limited education, and poor credit history. It would also favor wealthier immigrants who make more than $62,000 a year for a family of four. Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen has defended the proposal, saying that immigrants must prove that they can support themselves financially. I'm Suzanne Potter.
By the way, this change does not apply to undocumented immigrants, as they are ineligible for the program already.
I'm Mike Clifford. Thanks for starting your week, newsin' and cruisin' with Public News Service. We are member and listener supported, and we're online at publicnewsservice.org.
I'm Philip Grant. Amanda Purcell is reporting for Columbia Green Media that the Hudson School District would like to sell the now-abandoned John L. Edwards Primary School in time for the May school elections. Any sale would have to be approved by voters in a referendum. Currently, the only known interest in the large building has come from the city of Hudson, which is considering moving several of its departments, including code enforcement, the parking bureau, the youth department, Hudson Daycare, the clerk's office, and the mayor's and treasurer's offices into the school. The school is required to sell the building for at least $4 million to cover the debt owed on the building. Hudson City School District Superintendent Maria Stuttermeyer said, and I quote, "We are meeting with our attorney next month to discuss how best to move forward with transparent action steps to formally put the building on the market. We are not interested in waiting for a year to sell the building, but that will ultimately depend on finding an interested party who can make an offer," end quote. The city of Hudson may raise some money by selling its own building, the former police station at 427 Warren Street. Last year, the department moved to 701 Union Street. The Common Council will vote on approving the sale at 7 p.m. on November 20th at the Hudson Area Library, 51 North Front Street. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Diane Valden is reporting for the Columbia paper that COPEG is not handing over Lackawanna Road to convicted felon Salvatore Caccino. COPEG is currently a party to a lawsuit against Caccino, who was found guilty of contempt of court recently for not following the judge's 2016 decision to remove 9,650 cubic yards of illegally dumped solid waste from his property. Caccino is appealing the decision. He has also violated federal, state, and town laws over 20 years for illegal dumping, building, paving, and excavating at his COPEG Valley farm, just east of State Route 22. At its November 8th meeting, the COPEG Town Board discussed Caccino's written request to take over the road near his property. Councilperson Gene Mettler said the town should not give Caccino the road. And I quote, "If for no other reason than he closed off a town road," end quote. Town attorney Ken Dow said the issue was not up for debate. And I quote, "The town board cannot give away a road, even if you want to," end quote. Read that full story in the Columbia paper. Local ski resorts are taking advantage of the cold temperatures and the snow this week to open early. Windham Mountain has its earliest opening in 14 years, November 17th. There, for the first time in 58 seasons, the East Peak will open ahead of the West Peak. Hunter Mountain is also opening November 17th. Both resorts will be open Saturday and Sunday, then will close Monday and Tuesday, and plan to reopen November 21st for the season. Catamount Ski in Columbia County has not yet announced plans to open. The sounds of gunshots will be heard throughout the WGXC listening area this weekend as regular deer hunting season opens locally November 17th. Early bow hunting season and crossbow hunting season already has begun October 1st and November 3rd, respectively. Regular black bear hunting season also opens November 17th, and turkey hunting season is already over locally as of November 2nd.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts Monday there is a 30% chance of rain or snow, mostly in the morning, with mostly cloudy skies and a high near 38. Snow is also likely Monday night, mainly after 3 a.m., with cloudy skies and a low around 29. Almost an inch of snow possible Monday night. And Tuesday morning, the snow continues until about noon. Then it changes to rain. Scattered snow showers possible, too. High near 35, and a low around 22. Wednesday, again, there could be scattered snow showers after 1 p.m., otherwise, partly sunny skies with a high near 33 and a low around just 9 Wednesday night. Tom Rowe for WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, listener-supported, creative community radio.
To get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page, and copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar. If you have a press release for All Together Now, send it to news@WGXC.org, and our crack community reporters will see if we can mention your news on the local airwaves on the collaborative 6 p.m. local radio news show, All Together Now.
Tune in Thanksgiving Day, Thursday, November 22nd, for all sorts of special programming. At 11 a.m., Seth Rich is live in the Acra studio for an hour of high-octane orchestral music. We've got songs of thanks after the noon news. And then at 1 p.m., our rebroadcast of Ron Pohowski from Athens speaking with Alice Brock, the artist, activist, and restaurant owner, featured in the Arlo Guthrie song Alice's Restaurant. There's a Thanksgiving Donald Trump Theater at 3 p.m., followed by more radio theater with 3:30 p.m., where we'll find out if turkeys can fly. Thursday night, Cheryl Kay is in with the Jazz Disturbance at 7 p.m. Ted Barron has the Boogie Woogie Flu at 9:30 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, listener-supported Creative Community Radio.
Next, we have these reports.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
This is Willie Terry, your WOOC 105.3 roaming correspondent, and I'm in the streets of Albany here at the 35th anniversary of the Solidarity Committee of the Capital District, 35 years from 1983 to 2018, and they're having their celebration here at St. Andrew's Church at 10 North Main Avenue, Albany, New York. I hope that I get a chance to talk to some of the coordinators to find out more about the 35th anniversary of the Solidarity Committee and where they're going from here. They have people who are talking about the history, Fred Pfeiffer, Tom Ellis, Melinda Perez, Sue DuBois, and Larry Whitter.
I'm Tom Ellis here. When people ask me what the Solidarity Committee of the Capital District is, or Solidarity, I tell them that it's where the labor, peace, and anti-racist movements in the capital region join forces. I think this is correct, but it's not inclusive enough. The Solidarity Committee is among the most democratic, welcoming, and influential small organizations I am aware of. The Solidarity Committee has laid the groundwork for many groups and activities. Our now slightly retired chairman, John Funicello, set the tone. He made sure everyone was welcome and invited to participate in a meaningful manner at all of our meetings and events. John continues to edit the newsletter, which gets better with each passing year. And John made sure that the Solidarity Committee did not have a narrow focus. He insists we have a national and international focus, and we advocate for all workers, including black farmers and people, all farmers and any people of color. The Solidarity Committee lives up to its name. If you attend a Solidarity Committee meeting on the second Thursday of each month at the Social Justice Center, you will get a great education on national, international, regional, and local issues and concerns and how to positively impact on them. The 10 or 20 most active people in Solidarity are among the most competent researchers, activists, and organizers around. We share resources, skills, and information. We are all leaders. Unlike many groups, we have avoided sectarian differences, and most of the members not only work well together, but we enjoy doing it. No challenge is too great for us. We are committed to making the world a better place, not only for organized labor, but everybody. And we are all volunteers. The meetings can be fun, too. We joke about Doug Bullock being the boss. In recent years, Doug is often late for meetings due to his growing responsibilities as an Albany County legislator. As you can see,
he's not made it here yet.
He's going to be here, though. When he comes through the door, someone will joke, "Oh, the boss is here." And Doug will jokingly say, "Get to work or I'll cut your pay." Each of us has our expertise and skills. Susan is the treasurer and an expert on trade issues and single payer issues. Fred and Art and John are among the know more about organizing workers, labor law, labor unions, their leaders past and present than any people I know, and have been doing labor organizing their whole adult lives. Art takes the lead each year organizing the May Day celebration, always a collaboration with activists outside the Solidarity Committee, and a constantly evolving event. Jim keeps us updated on the United States Post Office, and ongoing efforts that he and others are making to block its privatization. He makes sure that we get the notes in the correct postal trays, the count and labels are correct, so that we can quickly get the notes into the U.S. mail. Tam makes sure that when Solidarity has an event, such as the annual Labor Day picnic or the Martin Luther King celebrations, at which free food will be served, that we have enough food, it is of high quality, and enough plates and napkins are on hand. As you can see, Tam did not organize the food for today's event. At these events, we all show up, we know what to do, and we get the job done correctly. Bill Ritchie is probably the best public speaker in our group, although the competition for this title is considerable. It is a pleasure to hear him speak. His passion is as intense as his knowledge of the issues. Larry Whitner is one of the top researchers and writers worldwide on the history of nuclear weapons and how it was the efforts of ordinary people like us who have again and again prevented nuclear war. Fred and Melanie keep us well informed on political events in Mexico and elsewhere in Latin America. They and many others keep the Solidarity Committee connected to immigrants and their activities. John Flanders and others travel to Cuba frequently and report on Cuban politics and economics. John has launched a separate project known as the James Connolly Forum, at which 6 or 7 times a year top labor leaders and writers deliver lectures. Larry and Dorothy manage the film series held at the First Unitarian Universalist Society in Albany, at which great feature and documentary films are shown. Nearly all of these events are free and all are open to the public. Among the major successes of the Solidarity Committee is our newsletter, the Solidarity Notes, published each month and now sent to more than 1,200 people, most of whom live within 100 miles of Albany. Reading any one issue of the notes will allow the reader to grasp the wide scope of our concerns and advocacy work. Amazingly, the notes has been sent out each and every month for 35 years, except for one time when we had a combined issue. Once in 35 years. In 1999, the Solidarity Committee began the annual Martin Luther King Jr. Labor Celebration, first held at the Wilburn Temple, later at Toast, and then more recently at the Hackett Middle School. And this event continued for more than 15 years. This labor event, sponsored by dozens of groups and individuals to hundreds of people, had a keynote speaker, poster contest, singing and dancing, workshops, and tabling by peace, labor, and justice groups. Unlike so many Martin Luther King holiday events, the labor celebration embraced Dr. King's many legacies in support of economic justice, racial integration, the beloved community, peace, and improving the lives of workers. Hopefully we can resume this celebration. When the Solidarity Committee celebrated its 30th anniversary in 2013, more than 15 labor unions took out advertisements in the event brochure. Several individuals wrote their thoughts on the group. One said, quote, "I feel honored to be a part of the Solidarity family. It is old school union, and it does not get any better than that. End quote. Another wrote, your citizen leadership at its finest, carry on the fight for a just, peaceful, humane, and new America. End quote. And finally, I'd like to say that we're halfway through the Trump presidency. I don't think he's going to last 4 years. And we're going to survive him, and we're going to bury everything he stands for.
Name. Gary Cunningham, USW Local 9265. We've been on many a picket with the Solidarity Committee. The most recent one was the Hilton picket with the workers down there, and I marched on probably about half a dozen pickets with them. I try to give as much time as I can with the Solidarity Committee. You know, I go to their annual picnic every year. I march on various rallies and pickets like that. And the program tonight was very excellent. Brought back a lot of memories. Everything to do. They're like they're down in the trenches doing the work of the middle class and the working class, and they do an excellent job day in and day out.
Right, thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Listen to music and voices. Listen to work and play. Listen to eat and drink. Listen to noise and fun. Listen to pink and blue. Listen to a heart rainbow. Listen to wizards and witches. Listen to jazz play. Listen to dogs and mice. Listen to Rome and Italy. Listen to Mars and Venus. Listen to the planet. Listen to teeth and trunks. Listen to Kaizen and Violet. Listen to stars and stripes. Listen to Texas. Listen to bells and waterfalls. Listen to churches and steeples. Dance and sing and listen and bells. Listen to making things, stripes and zigzags. Bike riding and zigzagging. No, listen to bike riding and curving. Listen to the radio going on and on. Listen to the radio WGXC.
Honey, I just heard some terrible news.
What's that, honey?
The radio station WGXC is going off the air.
Oh, my goodness. Did you know you could donate by check? Give them a check to WGXC 5662 Route 23, Accra, New York, 12405.
And you can also go to their website, wavefarm.org or wgxc.org, and donate monthly, a sustaining supporter.
Oh, I'll be a sustaining supporter, honey, once we get up to that St. Charles Hotel.
Oh, yes, I love the bar there.
There's no bar there.
That's what I meant.
Honey, did you know the Rolf Jansen Community Library serves Ankrum, Copaic, and Hillsdale?
As a matter of fact, I did know that. Ask me another.
Did you know that the Rojan Library has thousands of books, audiobooks, DVDs, and music CDs you can enjoy for free?
Yep, I knew that too.
Did you know that the Rojan Library puts on dozens of special programs like concerts and lectures, story time for kids, and seminars on computer skills and estate planning?
Uh-huh.
Well, Smarty Pants, is there anything about the Rojan Library you don't know?
Yeah, how do they get all that great stuff done with just 3 employees?
It's all about the volunteers. The library depends on volunteers for everything from working the circulation desk to staffing special events. They can always use more help.
Sounds like fun. How can I become a volunteer?
Just go to the library's website at rojanlibrary.org and click on the volunteer tab.
Hey, I knew that.
Sure you did.
The Cara Historical Society was established in 2009. Our mission is to collect, study, interpret, and preserve the history of the town of Cara, New York, for the educational and cultural enrichment of present and future generations. We love to bring history alive through our programming, such as our Hometown Heroes Banner Program, our State of the Union Dinners, our Victorian Teas. Each teach history while having fun. Members receive absolutely free our quarterly journal, the Caro Herald, which is jam-packed with historical articles, pictures, and society news. Everyone, however, can access the Caro Historical Society's Facebook page, which is a treasure trove of Caro history and memories. It's easy to become part of our historical family. Call Sylvia at 518-8.
To WGXC 90.7 FM from Accra. WGXC believes in hands-on two-way radio. We provide public access to all the airwaves, giving individuals and organizations the means to tell their own stories. WGXC listeners make radio, participate in on-air conversations, record public meetings for broadcasts, contribute content, host their own shows, and more. The G and the C stand for Green and Columbia Counties, New York. WGXC is listener-supported, and we serve 78,000 potential listeners in the Upper Hudson Valley, in addition to listeners from across the globe online. Our programs can be surprising, while wholesome, are very often experimental and almost always entertaining. Program applications are accepted year-round, and no prior radio experience is required. So if anybody out there has something to offer that they really think they want to get out there, this is a place to go.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the Healthcare Consortium, a rural health network dedicated to improving access to healthcare and supporting the health and well-being of the people in our rural community. Throughout 2018, the Healthcare Consortium will be celebrating 20 years of serving the residents of Columbia and Greene counties. To learn more about the Healthcare Consortium and its services, please visit www.columbiahealthnet.org or call 518-822-8820.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
Sarah Tapton is reporting for Columbia Green Media. The Catskills Zoning Board of Appeals determined November 14th that a local gun range will require a special use variance to continue hosting law enforcement training at the facility. Sheepdog Warrior Shooting Range, located at 104 Haynes Falls Road, requested the board interpret the zoning code after Code Enforcement Officer Elliot Fishman served the gun range with a cease and desist letter. The Greene County Sheriff's Office used the facility for training during a 20-day period in October. Sheepdog has been used by other police agencies as well, owner Edward Rivenberg said. Fishman took the position that because Sheepdog was hosting law enforcement training, the range was going beyond recreational use and would require a special use variance. The meeting was standing room only, with several residents voicing their concerns. The ZBA public hearing on the matter will be held December 12th. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Ken Levette is reporting for the New York Daily News. Governor Andrew M. Cuomo, November 15th, endorsed the idea of a legislative pay raise, the first in 20 years. But he was less enthusiastic about creating a single-payer health care system in New York. Cuomo made the comments during an interview on WCNY's The Capitol Press Room. Cuomo said that while he supports the concept of single-payer health care, he is concerned about the cost. He said, and I quote,
I have a lot of great ideas for Christmas gifts and I want to get, but then I have to deal with the reality of the cost and the budget, end quote. Cuomo said it would be better to have a federal health care solution than a state one. The governor said lawmakers who last had a pay raise in 1999 deserve one. He said, and I quote, legislators work very hard. They come to Albany. They're away from their family for days on end. They make tremendous sacrifices. I know it's not popular to say, but I do believe they deserve a raise, end quote. State lawmakers currently make a base salary of $79,500. Read full story in the Daily News. NewNutsandNews.com is reporting representatives from the Department of Defense visited the city of Newburgh November 15th to meet with public officials and to address the community about PFOS and the needed PFOA remediation efforts at Stewart Air Base. This marked the first time the federal government reached out to the community since the water contamination was discovered. According to Orange County Executive Steve Newhouse, the feds expressed interest in visiting Newburgh and the county took advantage of the opportunity. Before DOD representatives addressed the public, they held a closed session with elected officials from the state, county, and city. The subject of the closed-door session was about the creation of a restoration advisory board, Newhouse said. During the public session, community leaders and residents expressed resentment towards this practice, short notice for the forum, and the lack of a solid remediation timeline. PFOS blood testing is available for city residents and others affected by the water contamination. Read the full story at MidHudsonNews.com. David Lombardo is reporting for the Times Union. New York's voting procedures could undergo a significant overhaul as a result of the Democratic takeover of the state Senate. Proposed reforms include early voting, no-excuse absentee voting, and the implementation of a single legislative primary date. Many of the proposed changes stopped at the committee level when the GOP controlled the Senate. Speaking at an assembly hearing this week, State Board of Elections co-director Bob Bream said early voting could improve the, and I quote, customer service, end quote, experience for voters. Any expansion of voting days would mean local boards would have to add staff and polling sites and additional costs not previously part of the governor's budget. Early voting, as currently proposed, would last 7 days and end on the Sunday before the primary, special or general election. Critics of early voting cite the cost and note that late campaign surprises could occur after voters already cast their ballot. There is also support for automatic voter registration when applying for driver's licenses or upon high school graduation, but that legislation has not passed either chamber. Assemblymember Tom Abernathy, a Westchester County Democrat, said, and I quote, I think we should be voting online, but that's down the line, end quote. Read the full story in the Times Union. And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
Next, it's time for the Hudson Valley Song of the Day, a performance from a musician visiting the Capital Region or Hudson Valley, or who regularly plays around these parts.
Here's Hudson Valley singer-songwriter Lorcan O'Reilly with his song Poughkeepsie from his 2018 release Heaven Depends.
Locked to the light, I see a child's bike. There's a man twice my age with the saddle raised high. Old movies come bootlegged and old CD sleeves and cigarettes come singing quarter piece. Oh, Poughkeepsie. And how fast and how ruthless here Route 9 become. How the high street she cries, my death has begun. There's a word I saw carved in the bark of a tree. Would you lend me your knife to sharpen my teeth? Oh, Poughkeepsie. Church lawn, there's a message from your father above. It says no guns allowed, stop playing God. The big band leader sighs as he counts down to three, and we waltz between tables and empty seats. Oh, Poughkeepsie. Well, in time I may find a reason to love you. In time we may learn to share with ease. But now send me to bed with the windows locked, oh, Poughkeepsie.
Next, we have these reports.
I'm Tom Ray with WGXC, and you're listening to the Congressional Report for New York's 19th District. For news about Representative John Faso, current Republican from Kinderhook who holds the position, and Antonio Delgado, the congressperson-elect. Currently, the 538.com website reports that Faso votes with Donald Trump's positions 89.2% of the time, the same as before the election.
Jimmy Valkin reports in the Wall Street Journal that Representative John Faso blames Democrats and the media for his election loss November 6 to Antonio Delgado. He said the media coverage of his campaign was, and I quote, grotesquely biased, end quote. That was an apparent reference to many people calling ads run on his behalf by national Republican groups racist, which one local radio station pulls for that reason. While Faso's blaming of the media may sound like he was in step with Donald Trump, the president criticized Faso days after endorsing him on Twitter. Faso was one of eight Republicans who lost that the president blamed for not embracing his message. Faso said Trump was, and I quote, a big factor in generating the Democratic turnout, so I don't know that being more supportive in a public way would have changed the outcome in any way. It probably would have made it worse, end quote. Read the full story in the Wall Street Journal.
On November 14th, Faso voted for H.R. 6784, the Manage Our Wolves Act, which sounds like a bill everyone can get behind. But House Republicans inserted a line in the bill declaring, quote, the provisions of Section 7 of the War Powers Resolution shall not apply to House Concurrent Resolution 138, unquote. That effectively keeps American military forces in Yemen, even though that has not been authorized by Congress pursuant to the War Powers Resolution. So instead of a bill to protect wolves, this was a bill to keep the U.S. involved in Saudi Arabia's war with Yemen, where many war atrocities have occurred. The bill passed 201 to 187, with only six Democrats voting for it and 15 Republicans, but not John Faso, voting against. Since the election, Faso has been mostly silent on Twitter and his own website. Delgado has been posting photos from Washington, D.C., where he has been attending orientations and meeting other representatives. Faso did give one national interview this week with Bloomberg TV, where he again blamed Democrats and the media for his electoral loss.
I guess the most direct question is the president right? Would you have won if you had embraced him more closely?
Actually, I don't think so. Our district is very politically divided, and since I was elected and the president was elected in 2016, the Democratic base has been truly energized, and we saw this throughout the last 2 years. So I've handled the issue of supportive of the president on this way. I've said I'll support him when I agree with him, and most of the time I did agree with him on policies, and I will not support him when I disagree with him. And that's clearly the case, and I think that's what my constituents expected me to do.
So what lessons do you think we should take, all of us, and particularly Republicans, from this midterm election? And particularly for people like you who come from blue states, who come from districts that might be more divided, they're not Trump base, as it were. What is the route for those people to get to Congress, to get to the Senate, given President Trump's leadership?
Well, I think you have to carve out your own identity, and you certainly have to have a clear, consistent philosophy that will appeal to swing voters and voters in blue states like New York. I think it's clear the president supported candidates in Indiana, Tennessee, North Dakota, for instance, and they did very well. But that is not the environment that those of us who run in New York or California or New Jersey, for instance, face. So I think we have to recognize the Republican Party needs to be a big tent, and we have to be accommodating to the local concerns and local interests that exist in those states, especially if you want to win. We can't just be a party that is closeted into certain narrow confines, either ideologically or politically, around the country. That's a prescription for losing.
President Trump doesn't come across usually as a big tent kind of guy, if I can say that. He seems to be more somebody who excludes rather than includes. Is he really controlling? Is he leading the Republican Party at this point? When he first was elected, people said, not really. He's not even really quite a Republican. He was a Democrat for many years. But is he really solidifying his support within the Republican Party?
Well, I think there's no doubt the president has strong support in the Republican Party. And I've been pleased to support him on regulatory changes, on things like moving the embassy to Jerusalem, on ending the Iran deal, on standing up for the country to get our NATO allies to finally bear their share of defense costs in NATO. I'm all for the president. The president did a great job on renegotiating the NAFTA agreement that's helping our upstate dairy farmers. So there are many areas where I'm in agreement with the president. I think that what we have to do is recognize that the tone sometimes is going to turn off some voters. And if we're going to win in 2020, we've got to address that.
So give some advice to people who are left behind in Congress after you leave. You've been there. You've been part of the decision-making, part of the legislating. What would you advise your fellow Republicans in the House in terms of working with Democrats? Are there some areas that you could see people coming together and moving legislation forward that the president would sign?
I do think so. I think that I was a member of the Problem Solvers Group. It's a bipartisan group of Democrats and Republicans in the House. We set forth some constructive approaches on how to fix the mess that's the Affordable Care Act and try to address some of the issues of premiums and deductibles being way too high. I think that's one area. And I also think infrastructure still remains an area where you can find some common ground with Democrats and Republicans. It's pretty clear the Democrats are going to come in. I expect they'll overreach. Their progressive left base in the party wants things that, frankly, are not going to be good for the country, single-payer system, for instance. So I think we have to find areas where we can come together as Democrats and Republicans and agree. It's not going to be my problem next year.
It won't be your problem. But you have the wisdom maybe we could help people. And looking backwards, do you think the Republicans maybe overreached when it came to repealing the Affordable Care Act? That was a big issue. You took a couple of runs at it, and it really put it on the agenda in a way that I think may have made some voters across the country concerned about their health care.
Well, I think we clearly didn't sell the plan to people in an effective fashion. And because of our Freedom Caucus in the House, we wound up reopening this argument over pre-existing conditions, which should never have been opened. In fact, our bill, I believe, protected everyone with pre-existing conditions, but the Democrats made it an effective issue to try to exploit that weakness that we had. And that was done, frankly, to try to appease the right wing and the Republican Party in the House, the so-called Freedom Caucus, to get their votes to pass that bill. And candidly, many of them didn't even vote for the bill. So I think that My recommendation is that people in our conference have to recognize that not everyone is coming from a district in Alabama or Texas or Utah, and we've got to have a set of policies that you can sell broadly in the country, especially if you want to win in places like New York and California and New Jersey, etc.
Tom Rowe with the WGXC News Update. You can go to the newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about anything you hear here. Bill Mahoney and Anna Gronewald report for Politico that New York Senate Republicans kept John Flanagan as their leader November 16th as he beat Senator Kathy Young of Olean 14-9. Senate Republicans, aligned with several Democrats, had held the majority in the Senate until the November 6th election when they lost 8 seats. Quote, at the end of the day, we all came together. That's what we have to do, unquote, Flanagan said after the vote. Quote, I have every expectation that things are not going to be any different than when I was afforded the opportunity to serve as majority leader. I'm going to travel around all the state. I'm going to work with all my colleagues, as I have done year after year after year. We're playing a different role, obviously, being in the minority. But in terms of how we deal with our members internally, I expect to have the good fortune of serving with some really great, hardworking people, unquote. Read the full story for Politico. Daily Freeman reports that there were 100 new jobs added in Greene County over the past year, according to the monthly employment report issued November 15th by the New York State Department of Labor. Greene County employment rose 0.7% to 15,200 jobs from October 2017. In Columbia County, employment remained the same at 22,200 in October. In Ulster County, the non-farm job total rose by 1,400, or 2.1%, with 65,000 total jobs. Dutchess and Putnam County statistics are combined in the report, with 2,500 non-farm jobs added in the two counties over the past year, a 1.7% increase to 153,500. Statewide, the unemployment rate in October 2018 was 4%, down from 4.1% the previous month before, and down from 4.7% in October 2017. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman. Governor Andrew Cuomo announced November 15th $41.5 million in grants for 20 municipal water infrastructure projects in the Capital Region, including several in the WGXC listening area. They included Columbia County getting $2,299,250 towards a $9,197,000 project. The Village of Coxsackie got $3 million for its $5 million water infrastructure project. Germantown receives $625,000 for a $2.5 million project. Greenville gets $1,107,180 toward its $1,845,300 project. Petersburg in Rensselaer County gets $740,970 for its $1,234,950 project. And the Village of Ravenna in southern Albany County receives $2,382,000 for a $3,970,000 project. I'm Tom Rowe. Go to the WGXC newsroom, wgxc.org, for more information. The National Weather Service in Albany predicts Monday there is a 30% chance of rain or snow, mostly in the morning, with mostly cloudy skies and a high near 38. Snow is also likely Monday night, mainly after 3 a.m., with cloudy skies and a low around 29. Almost an inch of snow possible Monday night. And Tuesday morning, the snow continues until about noon. Then it changes to rain. Scattered snow showers possible, too. High near 35, and a low around 22. Wednesday, again, there could be scattered snow showers after 1 p.m., otherwise, partly sunny skies with a high near 33 and a low around just 9 Wednesday night. Tom Rowe for WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, listener-supported Creative Community Radio. Tune in to special programming on the air on WGXC 90.7 FM and WGXC.org Monday, November 19th. We've got a brand new programmer on the air at 11 a.m. Brendan Donegan is playing reggae at 11 a.m. Then Lincoln Meyer goes in with the Monday musical matinee. At 2 p.m. we hear experimental music from Amsterdam on the Vital Weekly show. And at 4 p.m. Roy Denniston and Phil Grant, members of the North Chatham United Methodist Church Get the Bell Well Committee, will discuss their efforts to get the historic bell at that church to chime again. And tune in at 7 p.m. for The Spell with J.D. Eisman. And at 10 p.m. we'll hear Matt Motel and Poughkeepsie-based saxophonist Joe McPhee on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM, wgxc.org. Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
The Siena College Research Institute has been around since 1980. We have been doing the current incarnation of the Siena College poll since 2005. And we do statewide polling virtually every month, polling New Yorkers on their views on elected officials, candidates, issues, what they want to see government do. And then we also do pre-election political polling. This year, our biggest year ever for doing that, we did 7 different congressional races in New York. We did the statewide campaigns 3 times. We did the Democratic primary 2 times. And in partnership with the New York Times Upshot, this year, Siena and the New York Times did polling in more than 60 congressional districts in 27 states in the United States between Labor Day and Election Day.
So when you say you did these polls, what is this? Is this when somebody gives you a call, identifies themselves as with Siena, and asks, what kind of questions do they ask?
Well, earlier on in the cycle, we were asking more issue questions as well as the quote-unquote horse race question. But in those final weeks, the final 2-3 weeks leading up to Election Day, we wanted to be able to do polls in as many different congressional districts as possible, as close to the election as possible. So we really limited the size of those polls down to, in various congressional races, favorable, unfavorable about the 2 candidates, a horse race question, who are you voting for if Election Day were today? Which party do you want to see control the House come November, after November? And do you approve or disapprove of the job that Donald Trump is doing as President of the United States? That was it. And then some demographic questions, age, gender, income, things like that.
Why is polling important?
I don't necessarily say that it's important. We can have elections without having polls leading up to election. But I think polls are a public service. What it does is it provides the public with an understanding of the world they live in. Sure, so we can tell people Cuomo's leading Molinaro or Katko is leading Bolter. But it's also about telling people what their neighbors and what their fellow New Yorkers think on issues from abortion to the American flag to Medicaid to environmental issues to criminal justice issues to budget issues. Over the course of the last 15 years at Siena, in terms of our polls of New York State voters, I think we've probably asked in excess of 200-300 different issue questions. And we report that so people know. I will often hear when I tell people one of the things that I do for a living is that I do polling, people will say to me, you know, I don't understand. The polls are all wrong. Everybody I know hates Andrew Cuomo, yet you guys have him up in the polls. Well, more so than ever, we live in silos. You only listen to and interact with people who believe what you believe. You know, either you're a Fox News watcher or you're an MSNBC news watcher. There are very...
There is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will tune it to a whisper. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can roll the image, make it flutter. We can change the focus to a soft blur or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your television set. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
This is Echo. You are listening to WJFC Acra, Creative Community Magical Radio.
I'm a rogue.